VentureCast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think a lot of it is hiring the right people and people that can do the job well. And you have to trust that they're going to really get it done. You know, it sometimes feels like, oh, I could do this better, but this, but that's not my job. And undermining them or micromanaging just creates bigger problems.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is another beautiful day here in North Carolina, and this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, Ignite Management Services and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week. So I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Also, I want to encourage you to join us on our growing YouTube channel. Search for Deep Leadership on YouTube for videos of all my interviews and exclusive content. Well, that is it. Today, we're going to be talking about how to scale your business, and my guest is Peter Mann. Peter is a U.S. Navy veteran and serial entrepreneur, and I talked to him about how he is successfully growing his air purification products business and why he is reshoring his manufacturing back to the U.S. Now, this was a great time sitting down with a fellow Navy veteran who is leading a manufacturing company like I am, and Peter shared some deep wisdom on what it takes to move beyond the startup phase and into an established industry brand. So I know you're going to love this discussion. So are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Peter Mann. Peter is the founder and CEO of Aranzi, a leading U.S. designer and manufacturer of air purification products for consumers, schools, and businesses. He is a U.S. Navy veteran and serial entrepreneur. Peter's company is experiencing skyrocketing sales due to the pandemic, and he recently bought and is finishing renovations of a large manufacturing facility in Virginia that had been sitting dormant for years. He is actively hiring more than 100 local workers to reshore his company's entire manufacturing back to the U.S. from China. And I am excited to have him on the show to learn from his unique leadership experiences. So, Peter, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good to meet you. We have similar backgrounds we talked about before we started a recording. And manufacturing is deep, near and dear to my heart, especially manufacturing in the U.S., because I feel like I'm a dinosaur, one of the last dinosaurs in the country. And it's good to meet another dinosaur. So it's good to meet you. But first of all, tell us about your background. How does a former naval officer become a successful entrepreneur? How did, in your mind, were you always going to go down the entrepreneurial route? Or did that suddenly just come out an opportunity was made available to you? Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had no idea. It was not part of the plan. I got out of the Navy in the, I'm older, in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was, you know, if you had a military experience, it was like, okay, how is that relevant to what we're doing? It just wasn't valued. And so, but I was fortunate to get hired into a large computer distributor during the start of really the computer industry, just rapid growth. And so I had 10 years experience at two Fortune 100 tech companies. And while I never had taken a business class in my life, I really got on the job MBA type training where I learned marketing, operations, finance, really how businesses work. And that gave me the confidence to, when the dot-com bubble burst hit, to go off on my own and start an e-commerce business as my first business.
That's exciting. And what, you know, I was just curious, you know, you were a surface warfare officer. You know, I'm just curious, what were some of the leadership lessons you learned in the Navy that maybe you took away that you use today in your businesses? Because I know you've got a lot of employees, and I'm wondering if some of those lessons don't still linger with you. By the way, I got out of the Navy in 1994, so rely on a lot of the lessons I learned in those early years as a naval officer. So I was curious to know about that with you.
Yeah, I don't know if this is more of a tool than a trait, but the plan of action and milestones, the POANM, like for me is just, it's about execution and, you know, setting a plan and this is how we're going to do it and this is when we're going to do it and this is how we're going to measure success. And to me, that's just been an invaluable tool. There's a lot of people that have great ideas, but it's like, how do you execute on that? Or when is this going to get done? Like if there's no timeline, to it, it just kind of just drifts along. Whereas for me, it's really helped to focus and get people, aligned, and moving together and understanding what we're working towards. And so for me, I think that has probably been the most valuable thing I learned in the Navy is just, you know, kind of managing projects, managing teams, all of that. Mm. I guess. And one other thing that just came to mind is, you know, when you join the military, you don't choose the folks that you're around. You're just kind of like, oh, here's your team. Like you have to manage these people. And like, I don't know anything about managing people. I'm like 21 when I started. And then I have all these people, most of whom were older than me, that I'm managing with different backgrounds. And so it was really, really learning very quickly how to work with other people and work with people that are different than yourself. Because really it's the team that matters, not, you know, any one individual. And so I think that's also been a really strong trait or skill. I think that for me, that was developed in the Navy.
Yeah, it's one of the things when I do talk to college students, you know, people are going through their MBA programs. I talk about that because, you know, we as young naval officers got the chance to lead people more experienced and older than us. And I talk to them, I say, this is going to happen to you, right? You're going to be leading people who are older and more experienced than you. So how do you become an effective leader when you're not the most experienced and the most knowledgeable and the oldest? And so the Navy did a good job putting us in those situations where we had to learn how to lead people who were, you know, very skilled at what they did. And so I think, and you're right, we couldn't just fire somebody or replace somebody. You dealt with who you went to sea with, right?
Exactly. And, you know, and you had to figure things out. It's not like there's no manual. I not aware of that when, you know, we went through a lot of training to get ready for it, but the interpersonal relationships was something you have to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things, you know, I mean, I know as a business owner myself, a manufacturing business owner, scaling businesses is difficult, and a lot of entrepreneurs struggle when the founder can control everything, it goes pretty well. But when you scale and you get to a certain size, the founder no longer can control everything. So there's a period that where you have to sort of give up a little bit of control, and many entrepreneurs struggle with that. How have you managed to effectively scale your businesses? How has that worked for you from a leadership perspective?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is hiring the right people and people that can do the job well, and you have to trust that they're going to do, you know, they're going to really get it done. You know, it sometimes feels like, oh, I could do this better, but this, but that's not my job. And undermining them or micromanaging just creates bigger problems. And so you have to be willing to let things go. But I think if you have the right people in place, it helps significantly. And communication's the other thing in terms of what's going well, what's not going well, and are we aligned in moving together, in what we're doing. But it can be very difficult when you've done all the jobs. Like when I started off, it was a company of one, like you do everything. And, and for me, it was like, I was glad to get rid of some functions because it's like, this is like accounting and taxes or it was just killing me. But in marketing, I love, and sales, not so much. And so just finding people that could do those jobs better than I could, it was almost a relief for me to not have to do it. Because as you start to grow, you get busier and busier. And it's like, I just can't, I'm just, there's not enough hours in a day to do it. But it's really being able to find the right people.
I think it seems like too, there's an element of trust, right? To be able to find the right people, but you're able to sort of let go and trust people. And maybe it doesn't happen overnight, but at least for me, as I've brought people on my team and I've given them more and more responsibility, I feel like now I trust you. I don't have to worry about that. You've got this. In fact, you've got this better than I ever had it, And I think that's exactly. When you get there, then it makes, I think, a little bit easier to focus on the things that you really want to focus on. And I think that's part of it too. Hire the right people, trust them and give them responsibility and sort of let go of a few things, because you can't do it all as your business scales.
It's not going to scale. Like, it's like you're going to be the limiting factor in the business. And, and one of the things we do is when we have a position and we really get very clear on these are the traits that this person needs to have, and it's interviewing and making sure that person is naturally gifted in those ways, and they're set up, that sets them up for success. And every position is different. You need different skill sets for different jobs. And it's the work you put in on the front end prevents all these problems on the back end if you make a bad hire. It's not good for the individual and it's not good for the company. It's a huge distraction. It's very expensive. And so getting the hiring process up front and done right is just, it's just well worth it, because I'll admit I've made some bad decisions in the past, and it's painful. And you just kind of lesson learned. Don't do that.
Yeah. One of the things with a small business, if you have two employees, then you're hiring that first employee, that's 50% of your workforce, right? People, you need to understand that. So like I've worked in corporate for 22 years, and so I had 600 employees. So if you hire one, it's 1/600th of your workforce, right? But in your small company, it's a very large percentage. So that hire has to be right. It has to, again, the skills have to be right. And the attitude, and is it going to be a good organizational fit? I mean, these things are really important in hiring in a small company, because it's such a big part of your team when you're when you're growing and you're small and you're growing. I think it's really important. Hiring is critical.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. So and as you reflect on your career, you've done your time in the Navy, you worked for large companies, now as an entrepreneur. What would you say some of the leadership traits that you've needed in the entrepreneurial side that might be different from like maybe the corporate side or even the military side? Some things that are kind of unique to entrepreneurialism.
Yeah. I think to me, like I see a difference between leadership and management. And I think the Navy with the authority and the chain of command is very management focused, whereas leadership is more around like inspiring people, or this is kind of where we're going to go. I mean, I guess there is leadership in the military, but that's really what entrepreneurship is. You have to, it's also focusing on the customer and the problem that you're solving for the customer, and building a community. I think management is a lot about, this is the way we do things. And, whereas I think leadership is being open to new ideas. It's like the most senior, loudest person in the room shouldn't like dominate conversations. I think the ideas come from everyone. And so I think it's a bit of a different perspective with entrepreneurship, because, you know, what I've seen is it's such a competitive marketplace, and you can't, like, one or two people don't have all the answers. And so it's really a team effort, and it's really about motivating your team. And, you know, no one wants to show up to work and be micromanaged, or, you know, you want to go and be fulfilled, or, you know, because you're putting 8 hours a day in, you might as well, like, why not enjoy it, and why not get something out of it? Mm-hmm. And so leadership is creating the environment for that to happen. So people, you know, will be excited to show up. They will do their best. And we're all kind of, you know, moving together to whatever this, you know, goal is we're going for.
One of the things I noticed, you know, just in terms of my entrepreneurial journey is that, so, you know, there's almost two worlds that you live in. One is the future, the vision, here's where we're headed. It's the thing that gets people excited. Here's our vision. Here's where we're going. And then the other side is the reality of the moment, which is sometimes things aren't going very well. You have product failures. You have, you know, you don't land that big account. You're dealing with the daily struggle of taking something from nothing, right? And so you have to sort of face reality, but also have this this focus that you're going to win no matter what, and you're keeping that, you know, excitement level with the team. And you can't really let go of the two worlds. You have to sort of stay connected with the reality, but you also have to keep the hope alive for the rest of the team. I don't know if you found any of that experience.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's kind of like, we're kind of living that a little bit in the moment right now. Is like, there's, you know, during COVID, things were just phenomenal. And now that we're kind of essentially on the other side of COVID, the market has completely changed. And we've had so many people, we're in the air cleaning, air purification space, and I've been doing this for 20 years. And it's just, everybody and their brother came out of the woodwork during COVID to enter the marketplace. And so now it's like the market's back to like 2019 levels, but you've got so many competitors, it's oversaturated.
Oh yeah.
And so it's a bit of a challenge, but I think a lot of it is just having awareness for what's happening in the marketplace and understanding, like, what are we doing that's different, that's going to allow us to really shine in the near future and going forward, and kind of reminding ourselves of, like, this is what we're working towards. And because it has been a little bit of a roller coaster these last few years. And so and you're reminding ourselves that, like, what we're experiencing is, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, what do we need to do to be successful and, you know, not get, you know, you're going to take punches as an entrepreneur. You have to be able to, you know, it's just part of the game. And it's like, it's not that you get punched. It's like, how do you react to it? And how do you, recover from that and get stronger? Or if a mistake was made, you just don't make that mistake again. It's like, got it. Let's, you know, be realistic, but also stay positive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting world we live in. Cause you're right. You got to stay connected with what's really happening on the ground, but also, you know, keep the team excited, motivated. Here's where we're going to go. Okay, it's a storm. So how are we going to trim our sails? And we're going to sail into it. We're going to sail around it. Here's what we're going to do. And yeah, I mean, because I always use the analogy of, like, my time in the Navy was that when things got rough, the seas were rough, and things kind of looked like it was going out of control a little bit. We all looked to the captain. We're like, is he nervous? Right? You know.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't, you know, and I just, him not being nervous sort of settled us down, you know. And I think the same thing with our small businesses, as we're growing, experiences, different trials, they're looking to us, you know, is he nervous? You know, is she nervous? And, you know, should we be nervous? And I think that's something I recognize that we're sort of on stage as leaders, you know, and people are watching us, and they're watching to see our reaction to things. And I think we have to be careful not to, we have to be authentic, but we have to be careful not to panic, I think, is. We don't want to panic the team, you know?
Yeah, I remember this is a Navy story. We were in the Red Sea, and it was a little bit of a stressful situation. And I was the gunnery officer and the ops officer was my boss, but he was very emotional. And I was just like calm as can be. And the captain like kind of like kicked him out and put me in charge because, you know, he just needed somebody that was emotionally stable in a stressful time. And I think that that's really important to not to freak people out. But you ought to be honest too at the same time.
Yeah.
But not be hysterical.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's counterproductive.
It's not good.
It's not good.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Leadership skills are like any other skills. You need to practice them to get better at them. Best-selling leadership author John S. Rennie knows this. That's why he's written a new book called You Have the Watch. It's a guided journal for leaders designed to take you through an entire year of leadership training. By the end of the year, you will master 50 of the most important leadership skills. If you want to have a greater impact on the results and people in your organization, go to youhavethewatch.com and pick up your copy today.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership. Whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation, it's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom, detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today. This episode is brought to you by Jeremy Clevenger at Liberty Strength. As a high-performing leader, you know that leadership isn't about telling people what to do. It's about leading by example. And for most people, the one area that they are lacking when it comes to leading by example is their health and fitness. By improving your health and fitness, every other area of your life improves. Your energy skyrockets, your sleep improves, your confidence increases, and more. But how can you get and stay fit as a busy leader? Well, you do what you've always done. You hire the best people for the job. Don't struggle on your own. Put Liberty Strength in your corner. Jeremy and his team will work with you to take your physique, mindset, nutritional habits, and more to the next level with his step-by-step, all-inclusive coaching program. I've worked with Liberty Strength for the past 2 years, and I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm still hitting strength personal records at 56 years old. If you want to step up your game, reach out to Jeremy at libertystrengthtx.com to find out more and get your initial consultation scheduled with him today.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
One of the things I mentioned in the introduction, you're renovating a facility that was dormant in Virginia, and you're going to be bringing a lot of production that was in China over to the U.S. I'm excited about that. Tell us a little bit about that journey, why you're doing it, and what are some of the challenges you're facing by doing that project?
Yeah, we merged with another company a little over 2 years ago. It's an electric motor technology company, and I've known the founder of that company for 6 or 7 years. We, you know, worked together previously. He built up a motor business, retired, and then came up with a new idea to make a more higher efficient, high performance motor at a lower cost. And so, I re-engaged with him and decided to merge our companies together. And in that process, also purchased about 156,000 square foot manufacturing facility that had been sitting idle. And really, this motor technology is really a platform for us to start to reshore manufacturing. One of the things that I've noticed is that, and there's some surveys that prove this, that most people prefer American-made products, but very few people want to pay any kind of a price premium.
Yes.
And so that's been our challenge.
That's what I've learned as well.
Yeah. And so it's like even like 5 or 10% is like, nope, I'm going with the import. And so we figured out how to make air purifiers and then longer term some other electrical-based products the same or lower cost than the Chinese imports with the same or better performance. And so now that we've solved it, we're like super excited. And so it's really been about a two and a half year process of renovating our manufacturing facility to get it ready for manufacturing. Right now we use it as a distribution center and we're contract manufacturing. Our products are actually made in China. We bring them in and we do the fulfillment. And what we're going to be doing starting next month is manufacturing or taking raw materials and components, making the units, and then selling them direct to the end user. So we own like the supply chain. We're very, vertically integrated. And that's another way to keep costs down is if there's no middlemen in the sales process. And so that's kind of what we're on the cusp of. So we're super excited. And then not just air purifiers, but maybe in a year or two, we'll branch into some other product categories. And so we can really, kind of fill out the factory.
No, that's fantastic. That is really, it's really good to hear because I think we hear a lot of maybe politicians talking about, oh, we need to bring jobs back to the US. And
yeah,
but it really takes entrepreneurs. It really takes people who are, and it takes capital, a lot of capital. People don't recognize that mm-hmm. many of these ways that we produce don't even exist in some cases in the US anymore. So you're talking about, like I have one component in my product line that no one in the US makes. It's a component that I need for my product that is only made in China and Japan. So I have to get it, currently sourcing from there, but I'd love for someone in the US to be able to make that one material for us. But again, it's people don't realize the difficulty of this because we've, in a lot of cases, and I've noticed is that we've lost some of that capability in the U.S. And so we just don't have it. But yet they have it in spades over in China. They are what we were, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in Syracuse and my dad worked for GE and there's a lot of manufacturing and, it's kind of, I guess, the Rust Belt, you could call it, in the 70s and 80s. And a lot of those jobs went overseas, but there was some infrastructure in place. Like they were making, in the 60s and 70s, colored TVs just 2 miles from my house. There were all kinds of electronics products and components and it just all left. And so for me, it's pretty rewarding to be able to bring it back in a small way. We're not GE by any means, but it's just sad to kind of watch the community just decline, over decades. And even in this area where I am in Virginia, there was furniture companies that were kind of just put out of business and, a pretty large one, not too far from our factory it used to be a pretty huge company and they brought some designs over to China and then China copied them and then resold them as their own and put these guys out of business.
Yep.
And it's very like, cutthroat. I don't know. It's a bit sketchy. Or I don't know if that's ethical. It didn't seem very ethical to steal someone's designs and sell them as your own. But it put a lot of people out of work. And so, I think if we figure out how to take cost out, which is really labor, is really the main cost difference. We can be competitive, but to your point, it's not like Shenzhen where you go down the street and get any component you want. It's like the supply chain doesn't exist. Like you have to, like it's taken us 2 years because we're having to create a supply chain that doesn't exist. The government's not interested in supporting this. You know, they support certain things, like chips and batteries, which I think are very important. But outside of that, it's pretty tough to rely on the government. We don't rely on the government for anything. We kind of like, we tried and it's like, nah, we'll do it on our own, or we'll get some, you know, some partners to, you know, help fund us. But, you know, this is kind of how it is.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that, you know, again, my experience is the government, you know, if they get involved with a project, it's, you know, it's in the beginning, there's a picture, and then they go off and we're going to create X amount of jobs. But there's no real help after that point. You still get tax bills, you still get fees, you still have government inspections that, you know, that'll shut you down if something is, you know, you don't have the right, you know, angle on a wheelchair ramp or something like that. So it seems like they're happy to smile and take a picture, but they're really not helping. Not like what I saw. You know, I spent a lot of time in China myself, and you see the government almost fully, you know, helping the manufacturers be successful. What do you need to be successful? What equipment do you need? What, you know, whereas we sort of have to fight sort of the local government, the local, you know, process just to get our factories up and running. And I don't know if you experience the same, which is, you know, there's no favoritism. You just have to meet all the requirements and and they can shut you down for any little thing, you know, what I found.
Yeah, I agree. It seems more photo ops than anything. Yeah. You know, they're running to stay in office or not. It's just sad to say, it's, you know, it just hurts to like, but it's just the reality of it, you know, and if that's the way it is, then you have to find it, you know. Part of being an entrepreneur is figuring things out and finding ways to make it happen. And the government's really for most businesses, not going to be that much of a help. I mean, there are some like SBA programs and some other things that I think can be helpful, but in terms of just getting, you know, a huge seed fund or something from the government, it kind of not how it works.
Not how it works. No, not.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, I have a passion. I don't like to see abandoned manufacturing businesses. That's always bothers me when I see it. I wonder if you feel the same way when you saw this facility that had been shuttered, and that when you thought of the idea of taking 156,000 square foot facility and bringing it back to life, was there part of you that had this desire like I do? Like I love seeing an old building come back to life. And I don't know if you have any of the similar experiences with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice. I think the building we were in was like an old Volvo truck distribution center, and they make Volvo trucks a couple exits down the highway from where we are. But it sat idle for 3 or 4 years, and it's it looked like it. And so, but it is shocking to see, you know, when you take something that's dark and dingy and the air conditioning systems are all rusted out and water's leaking through the roof, and then to fix all of that stuff and then just kind of turn it into a bright, shiny factory. I mean, we've only really done a part of it. We still have like a good section to go, but we're kind of taking it piece by piece. But it is rewarding to see that come back. And, you know, we got a good deal on it because we bought it during COVID when nothing was moving. So it's actually worked out great. And in our area, there's no other buildings similar to that are available. You'd have to, and to build it from scratch costs.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So much more. It's not affordable.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got lucky. Yeah,
it sounds like it. I mean, you know, ours was a tobacco processing, made tobacco, you know, and now built in the 70s, and it would look like a war zone when we walked on day one. We're like, okay, can we ever turn this thing into something, you know, world class? And we have, but it took a long
time.
Took a couple of years. And we only had 50,000 square feet. So you have a 3 times the challenge that we had. So.
Yeah, it's big. Yeah.
It's a big facility. So
yeah.
Yeah. Do you, as you meet up with other leaders and they're considering reshoring work like this, what are some things they need to be thinking about as they start, considering, the reasons for doing this and some of the challenges that they need to be thinking about when they start, this idea of bringing work back to the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's really good because we have control over the whole manufacturing process. It's, when we manufacture products in China, we send inspectors in to tear them apart and check every component and make sure, just to make sure everything's UL certified and all that. But having control over the manufacturing, having quality, it's not like in China to ship it to where we are, it's about 60 days on the water. And if we have a problem, we're manufacturing just in time. And we're shipping direct to the end user. So we'll know in a week if we make something or maybe 3 days. If there is a defect, we can fix it right away on the line. And we don't have containers coming in that have this problem. Yeah. And so from a quality and control standpoint, it's huge. And also during COVID, the ocean freight costs went up dramatically. It's so painful. And so now we're not really having to deal with that so much going forward. But the challenge is like I said before, is how do you get your how do you be cost competitive? Like, how do you sell this in the marketplace? And for us, it was, how can we take labor out and make the assembly so much more efficient to where and reduce the number of parts to where it's like, okay, well, we use a quarter of the people to manufacture it than the Chinese do. And so the fact that they don't pay anybody anything, we can kind of, neutralize that. And then building a supply chain takes longer, costs more than you think it will. Yes, so it's the product. And you have to kind of plan for that. Like to get something made in China, they are so fast and they work so hard. They're so hungry. And it's like, it doesn't sound great, but like I've not found the average American just doesn't work like they do. But at the same time, it's a bit grueling. I was reading recently, they have a 9-9-6 work schedule. A lot of tech companies, I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week, 72 hours a week.
That's crazy.
And the average factory worker, I believe, makes $10,000, $11,000 a year working a ton of hours. Many of them live at the factory. And it's just the quality of life is so poor. And so for me to be able to offer a product, even if it's comparable to what the competition is, to have it made here by like people in the local community and to pay people a living wage and make it in an environmentally responsible way, to me is like, it's the right thing to do. But the cost is really critical. Like if it costs you twice what it does for your competitors from made in China, it's, I don't know, you'd have to have a good sales strategy or a really good story why somebody would want to buy that then. Because we worked with a contract manufacturer in Connecticut 10 years ago, and the costs were just four times what the Chinese costs were for a comparable product. And we sold some and people liked it, but you're playing in a tiny part of the market when you're so premium like that. And so I think it's really understanding your market and can you be successful and do you have any way of being like competitive, especially on the cost side, because it's tough.
Yeah, it really is. So it is a cost game. You got to make sure those numbers work. Otherwise, it's a lot of work for nothing if you can't, sell the product in the market and people are just going to go to Amazon and buy the competitor's product because it does the same thing and it's, maybe 10% cheaper. You're in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of brand loyalty in general. Right. Like, it used to be more, but now that there's so many options, it's like, this isn't my budget. I'm going to buy that one. And so, but to me, that's why I like marketing so much, because marketing is about telling stories, connecting with people. And, because we don't buy most things rationally. We buy them on emotion and then we justify it rationally. And so it's like, how can you craft a story that emotionally connects with someone to where they want to buy it and ideally tell somebody about it? And so that's the that's the trick. And, you know, reshoring is going to be part of our story going forward. And I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in that, especially even with like world events, or if you care about the environment, or if you have pride in American manufacturing. There's all different angles. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And I think your story is going to be popular. I think people are going to like to hear the story. I think that's, it's a story that resonates, you know, because it's hard work. And like you said, it's not like the government's, if you will, helping you, but you sort of have to do it on your own. And it's a lot of money, it's a lot of investment, and it's a lot of, you know, carrying a lot of burden on your shoulder to be able to do it. But you're doing it, and I'm excited about it. And and I think your story is going to resonate with a lot of our listeners as well. As we wrap up, what final message would you like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, I would say to stick on my marketing theme is, I think about products, and you have to build marketing into your product. If you build an average product, you're just going to spend a ton of money, especially a consumer product and advertising. So build marketing into your product and make it remarkable so it stands out.
Great advice. This has been really good. Peter, how can people find out more about you and your company?
Sure. I'm on LinkedIn, Peter Mann, M-A-N-N, and our company is Oransi, O-R-A-N-S-I.com.
And we'll go ahead and put links in the show notes for Peter and his resources. And again, leaders, if you're thinking about reshoring your manufacturing, if you're thinking about opening up a factory here in the U.S., and you want to talk to somebody, reach out to Peter. Peter is going to give you a hand, give you some advice and some of the things, because we, you know, in a half hour, we can't cover all the headaches that he's had in the past 2 years. But I can guarantee, you know, having done it myself as well, it's not easy to do. And there are a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of stress. And but you're doing it, Peter. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story, because I think it's a story we need to hear more of in the U.S. So congratulations on your success so far, and I wish you the best of luck going forward with all that you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Bachlaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electricast production.
See you there.
Electricast.